Welcome to Autism Knows No Borders, a podcast where people connected to autism inspire change and build community. Together with the Global Autism Project, I'm your host, Rachel Harmon, a professional with over a decade of experience in the field of autism services, outreach, and advocacy. Have you ever heard the phrases, "You don't look autistic," or "Everyone's a little bit autistic," or "You can't fill in the blank because you're autistic"? If you or anyone you know has ever felt that their autistic experiences don't matter, this is one episode you'll want to listen to. We are kicking off Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month with this roundtable discussion about overcoming prejudices and breaking the stigma around autism, facilitated by community moderator Danielle Terrell and featuring autistic self-advocates Thomas Island, Brian Middleton, Corbin Havener, Mary Johnston, Bob Schmoos, Sarah Bradford, and Amy Smith, as well as fellow community members Rosetta Walker and TJ Laram. Among other things, they discuss ableism in the form of gaslighting, masking as a defense mechanism, breaking stereotypes, the medical versus the social model of disability, autism in legal situations, and limitations set by some medical professionals. In this episode, discover what's possible when you belong. And now I present you the Global Autism Community.
My name is Corbin Havener. I am a self-advocate. I am working on getting into education. I'm actually a special education assistant at my neighborhood middle school. There's a student who lives a couple houses down that is in a couple of the classes that I assist in. I'm on that job now, and I'm also a Skill Core alumni for October 2023, Kenya.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tom Island. I'm based in Santa Clarita, California, just north of Los Angeles, and I own my own coaching business, Come to Life Coaching, based on the title of my book, Come to Life, Your Guide to Self-Discovery. It's also available in Spanish, if you know anyone who speaks Spanish. And I make it my mission in life to help people on the autism spectrum become their best selves by finding out who they are, what they want, and how they can make the world a better place, because life doesn't come to you. It's up to you to come to life. And I recently wrote a second book called My Glass is Full, Stories of Putting Mental Health First. And I'm using this as a basis to hopefully get me to the Toastmasters International World Championship of Public Speaking. I just won my first of what will be 7 contests Tuesday night. So wish me luck on getting to the finals. Thank you very much.
And you recently had an international keynote.
Yes, I was at Tanzania for the international. I drew a blank on the abbreviations there, but it was on the International Day of Persons with Disabilities that I spoke in Tanzania, giving a closing keynote 3 months ago.
Congratulations. Thank you. Mary?
Hi, I'm Mary, and I have a blog, Autistic Rainbow, where I just kind of talk about my life on the autism spectrum, but sometimes I mention tips and tricks to help out parents or people themselves.
I'm TJ, a Skill Core alumnus from Rwanda 2022 in the summer there, and then India this past year. Oh, was it already 2024? I'm a regional director for an in-home therapy provider and also a PhD candidate at Simmons University in behavior analysis. Excited to be here. We got a party going on.
Hi, I'm Brian Middleton. I am ADHD. I'm also a behavior analyst. Recently just got a promotion to be a clinical director for a new clinical center that's opening up here in Southern Utah, where we're going to be, I'm really excited, doing some research on enhanced choice model and also using verbal behavior frameworks to understand soft skills better and turn them into hard skills. I'm also known as the bearded behaviorist, and I am a disability rights advocate who is loud and proud of it. And one of the things that I try to do a lot of with the work that I do is elevating other voices, making it so it's easier for other people to be heard. And yeah, I love understanding behavior and understanding myself and understanding the people around me. Hopefully one day go for a PhD, but right now really busy. So there you go.
Hi, I'm Sarah Bradford. I am a mom, a wife, children's book author, a podcaster, an event host, and a soon-to-be nonprofit, which I'm super excited and hoping to bring it all together and kind of side-by-side Global Autism Project, just connect people around the world and hopefully, you know, make all those connections meaningful for families and everybody who needs it. So yeah, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you guys.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rosetta Walker, Queen of Inspiration. I am also a best-selling author, motivational speaker, Les Brown. I'm a life coach, spiritual counselor, and autism advocate. I'm also there for children. I've been for a long time. For children that have been abused, children that have been molested, and all across the spectrum when it comes to children. I'm also a spiritual counselor, which means that I coach people not only in their life and what they want to do in the natural, but also to get them a higher connection with themselves in the spiritual realm. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here with you all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy. It's nice to meet you all. This is my first meeting with you. I kind of figured out I was autistic back in September and got my formal diagnosis earlier this month. I'm a resident physician now. I am also an attorney. I worked as an attorney before doing med school, mostly just going through life trying to figure out a good career at this point that maybe can involve some autism advocacy in the medical legal realm. So yeah, thank you all for having me and for putting all this on.
Hi, everyone. My name is Robert Schmuth. I am an autistic self-advocate. I am a licensed therapist. I am also a public speaker on autism advocacy. I've done many talks on different subjects, such as like transitioning into adulthood, maintaining independence, mental health, relationships, employment. I've been a keynote speaker at many events, and especially one in the Philadelphia area and in Massachusetts. I'm actually going to be on a panel for the Institute of Neurodiversity for the United Nations Autism Awareness Day.
That's amazing. Congrats. So many exciting life updates this month.
Thank you.
And my name is Danielle Terrell. I'll be facilitating the discussion tonight. I am also a SkillCorps alum, traveled to India this past July. I'm a transition specialist and an advocate. I've worked with individuals all across the life spectrum in different settings. So excited to be here today with everyone. And our theme for this month is overcoming prejudice and stigma. So some of the things that we will be discussing are gaslighting, ableism, and intersectionality, and we'll tie up the conversation with advocacy. So for whoever wants to jump in and start the conversation, maybe talk about what gaslighting is, kind of like a definition or something that maybe you've experienced. You wanted to explain it in your own way.
I'll break the ice here on what that means to me. I would say gaslighting means basically being told or given the idea that what you are thinking, feeling, and experiencing is not what is really happening. And from what I understand, there was a movie called Gaslight in which a husband was telling his wife that what she was seeing or experiencing or feeling was not the case at all. And she was driving herself nuts, thinking she was going insane, when really he was deceiving her. Applying that to the autism community, sometimes we are told what we are seeing, feeling, experiencing, thinking is invalid or not the case. And yet we are the ones that say nothing about us without us. And who better to learn about autism than from someone who lives with it every day? So it would make more sense, or the most sense even, for the community, society as a whole, to listen to us more, believe us when we say something, and take what we have to offer into the next steps.
I want to piggyback off that. I just have to agree, you know, there's been a lot of gaslighting within the autism community. Like many people, especially from those who that say they want to like help our community and want to like do that, but they tell us, you know, oh, we have to do it this way, we have to do it that way, and you guys aren't going through it. Oh, those aren't sensory issues. Oh, you can grow out of it. When in reality, you know, they don't really fully understand what the issues are. And that's why it's vital for our voices in the community to be heard.
I agree with Robert. One thing that I see a lot is that a lot of parents of autistic children are really, really passionate about talking about what autism is, but they don't want to ever listen to actually autistic people. And whenever actually autistic people offer advice, they just blow it all under the bridge, thinking that they somehow know less than them. And you obviously know what works best for you and your child, and that's great, but that doesn't mean that you can just completely ignore autistic advice. Like, because autistics are just trying to help you out, stating things about their life and what's worked for them. They don't mean any ill intent. And when you say like, oh, well, I know autism, I have an autistic child, that's your autistic child. You're not actually autistic yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I think where the gaslighting comes in on that is the fact that a lot of the people, you know, that want to share like their experiences and share the acceptance and, you know, just break the information, it are, you know, are people, a lot of times we have better access to it. For one thing, maybe like there are some great non-speaking advocates out there without a doubt, but, you know, most of the time they have a hard time getting a platform because, you know, they do need that support to get there. But, you know, if somebody like me might talk about it, like might offer some experience or anything, you know, there's this, I guess there's this interview that blew up that, you know, thinks that, you know, the autism social media thing is just a social cohesion thing, and that we are the ones that are making a mockery of it. And I think that comes down to the term that in the self-advocate community, we know as the autism mom, which is not an endearing term from our point of view, because when I think of that term, I think about the parent that makes it their entire personality and is essentially mourning the child they wish they had that they think autism took away from them. But there is a difference. You can be a parent to an autistic child that is a great advocate, that will show up at the IEP meetings and make sure that none of their needs are being shortchanged, or making sure that they have the appropriate level of independence as they age. So, for example, they have the opportunity with special education supports to be able to receive and participate in the appropriate level of curriculum and participate with all of their peers. And that would be the difference between, say, an autism mom and the parent of an autistic child.
I can just kind of maybe relate on several levels of that. As a mother that was first a mother to an autistic child and then became, you know, found out myself. So I think that there's a delicate line that we all have to make, not only for autistics and for children, for individuals, but also for parents, for grandparents, for guardians, to know that, you know, even maybe making the assumption that they should know what they're doing rather than helping by lending advice and grace and opportunity for them to also gain a better understanding and then also have a higher experience for themselves.
And that actually perfectly segues into the point I wanted to make, which is that oftentimes what we assign to malice is frequently lack of awareness. And so there is actual gaslighting. I'm not saying that gaslighting doesn't exist. It definitely does. And I've experienced it, hardcore experienced it, where something is happening to me or to somebody else who I am supporting, and that person is seeing it and dismissing it. That would be the definition of gaslighting. And yes, it is based off of a movie. Previous to that, it was a play where the husband, to get the proverbial millions, I think it was less than millions at the time, but basically our money time, it would be that, was trying to get his newly married wife committed by tricking her into thinking she's insane. And he was flickering the gas lights and moving things behind her back and then making her seem like she, like trying to drive her crazy. So there is that. But then there's a lot of the times we're seeing a lack of awareness. And a lot of times when I encounter autism moms, it's because they're stuck in their own situation where they're perceiving their own suffering, and they may or may not be truly suffering. I can't say, but part of it has to do with how they're relating with their child. Part of it has to do with how they relate to themselves. And as a significant portion of it, at least for a lot of the more vehement people I've come across, is that they may themselves be neurodivergent in some way and don't have the support that they need. And I've made this observation oft times. The people who are most dangerous to the unmasked autistic are the heavily masked autistic. The neurotypicals tend to be a little bit less vehement on the patterns that they've followed, but the masked autistics, those people who have so thoroughly protected themselves by putting on this mask, by hiding themselves in plain sight, unmasking is dangerous to them. And it may legitimately be truly dangerous to them. Their systems might be triggered and they might think that they're under threat when they're observing that. That doesn't justify it. This never justifies it.
Right. And just want to state with that, Brian, it could be that, now, of course, everybody is different when it comes to it, when it comes to the masking. Exactly. But it could be that it might be that if the autistic person might have unmasked in the past, but because of the lack of awareness of autism that occurred, them being unmasked might have been traumatizing to them.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that I've done with some friends is we've gone through and we've tried to define what masking is. Because a lot of times the gaslighting we get from professionals, especially inside the behavior analysis community, which whom I belong, is, well, masking is not real. And it's like, well, okay, that's not very scientific of you to say that when people are describing something. That scientist asks questions and tries to figure out what's being described. And so we've gone through and we've broken down neurodivergent or autistic masking. And you're right. Masking comes around as a defensive mechanism more often than not. Masking is similar to, but not the same as, code switching. And code switching itself serves a defensive mechanism. The function's the same. It's protective. And then when we have people who have multiple intersectionalities, then we see masking and code switching in that combination of the two. And it's like the person is under threat. That's the reason why masking occurs. Is a threat real? Yes, because that's how they're perceiving it. But also, it's also, what's our culture? What are we doing in our culture that makes it so that it's accessible or not? And that's what neurodiversity is about, is trying to understand, oh, hey, surprise, everybody's different. you know that saying, if you've met one autistic, you've met one autistic? That's a very odd way of saying everybody's different. Why do we have to use these terms and these words when we can just say, hey, everybody's different? This person has different needs than this person. Let's individualize and let's create a welcoming environment where everybody can be themselves. And then if there's clashes, then that's where social stuff comes in. And that's where we learn to problem solve together and create collaborative culture. But it needs to be truly collaborative. It's not, you must do as we say because you are X.
Right. Exactly. It has to be collaborative, and very much so. And what you just even said there, what the scientist said, well, masking isn't real. That right there is gaslighting.
Brian, I like what you said regarding the behavior analytic community. If of all the things I can comment, I think that would be my wheelhouse and my contribution to this meeting here. But as I say every time in these roundtable discussions, I'm so happy to be here and hear perspectives, and I gain a lot from listening. So thank you all. This is all fantastic. With respect to it's an interesting way to say someone's different, right? You met one person with autism, you met one person with autism. It is interesting when you think about the aims of a lot of therapy writ large across any diagnosis, anything. It's the trend towards homogenous functioning, performance, what have you. And it's all, how can we get everyone to kind of filter into where it would be under the standard deviation or like under the dome? And so I think that in therein lies quite a bit of gaslighting. It's almost the nature of helping professions in many ways. Just kind of piggybacking off what you might have said, what you said about just this weird way to say things are different. And then a lot of times the nature of helping professions is in service of kind of bringing everyone again under the dome, which is unfortunate towards a person-centered planning at all times. That should be the gold standard of any kind of helping anywhere.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah, so gaslighting and kind of one of the things that Brian, you were mentioning with if you met one person with autism, does anyone feel kind of maybe similar, or also does it fall under the gaslight umbrella when people say like, everyone's a little bit on the spectrum, or everyone feels that way sometimes? I'm seeing a lot of nodding.
Well, and I was going to bring up, the good old sentence, you don't look autistic. Mm. Like, how can you don't look autistic. That's not true. You know, look at our conversation we're having. We're making eye contact, or you have empathy. Just some absurd, but like you also said, uneducated, and just usually come from a place of not malice, hopefully, but yeah, but an unawareness.
Hello, Rachel here again. Would you like to share your own perspectives by participating in roundtables like this one? Join our online Global Autism Community, a safe and judgment-free space where all kinds of people connected to autism regularly discuss important topics like autistic identity, dating on the spectrum, coping strategies, and many, many more. We'd love to see you there at community.globalautismproject.org. And now, back to the roundtable.
I definitely agree with what you were saying, Sarah. I think like so many people, when I tell them that I'm autistic, they're almost shocked. Like they only believe the stereotypes of what autism can be. You're either Sheldon Cooper or you're like, you know, can't speak, can't talk, can't do anything by yourself. And it's so annoying when they think of it as just a black and white diagnosis, because I think of it as really kind of a circle. You know, there is no one side. It's all very diverse. And somebody who is nonverbal, for example, they can still do things on their own. Like I saw this really talented autistic and he is semi-verbal and he can draw. You know, you can't just rely on stereotypes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, everything is, it's kind of like why, you know, we're in the neurodiverse category, because we, you know, everyone's diverse in their own way. I know, like, as we said earlier before, like if you, the whole phrase of if you see an autistic person, you see an autistic person. It's just, yeah, I know we have to say it's better to say everybody's different. But yeah, like we can't just, I think that's been kind of the stereotype that we've had, our community has had over the many years. It's just that we're good with this. We're have to be with math. And, you know, it's still something that has been implemented into our system, when in reality what we have to do is we have to really show that we're not just a block, we're not just a square block of each side of that block is this category, is this talent. Like you said, Mary, is that we're a circle, and within that circle, not but also a array of colors, a different like mixture of colors, in that that's our talent, and each one is different with that, if that makes sense.
And also in the area of not fitting everything into a box, one thing that you know, I remember from SkillCore, this was a continuation from the March 2023 trip where we were implementing Kaizora's like employment initiative with a, a natural soaps and household cleaner company called Grounded. And I remember the vocational skills department at Kaizora, they're working to get some of the non-speaking clients employed with Kaizora. And, you know, some of the things we were mentioning was verbal speech is not the end all be all. You know, communication just exists in so many different ways. And when I was talking about how like implements of universal design can be included, not only can you put instructions on how to do a job in English, you can put instructions on how to do the job. In this case, it's Kenya, so you'd also have Swahili. Put Braille on it for good measure, but also diagrams. Picture diagrams a lot of times exist as well. And it just comes down to the fact that people will read and interpret the information in the way that is easiest and most convenient for them. English can be your second language. You can speak English fluently, but every self-checkout station also offers a Spanish, because if Spanish is your native language, you're just probably more comfortable conversing in Spanish when you have that opportunity as well. It's all about giving everybody the opportunity to communicate and receive information that is the best for them. And if somebody doesn't have that verbal speech, there's no reason we should have to be able to make that a roadblock for them.
You touched on something beautiful when you brought up universal design, Corbin. Mm-hmm. And I briefly looked it up because I was like, wait, that sounds familiar. And then I was like, oh, cool. I forgot that I was going to look into this. So thank you for the reminder. But like, this kind of tangentially relates to what you were saying. But who are we as people? Like, this is speaking to everybody here, but also to the listener of the podcast. Who are you? What makes you you? Is it what you do? Is it your job? Is it your relationships? Is it your passions? Is it what you care about? Who are you? Because one of the things that autistics and really anybody who experiences disability that we consistently struggle with is the fact that we're dehumanized. We're a person with a disability, as if it's some sort of lump on our shoulder that needs to be removed. And I like to point out over and over again, because I think this helps people to understand, if you are good at drawing or music, you're not a person with artistry, you're an artist. If you're good at physical activity and sports, you're not a person with athleticism, you're an athlete. If you're somebody who has children and you take care of them, you're not a person with parentalism, you're a parent. Who are we? Autism is a part of who we are, but I am not just autistic. I am also a parent. I'm also a teacher. I am also an artist. I am also a poet. I'm also a friend, a father, a husband, a child, an explorer. Like, who are we? And really, that's the problem that we're facing, is that the system that's currently in place is one that dehumanizes us consistently. And not just us, but our peers, not just fellow autistics, but anybody who experiences disability, because disability is perceived as something that's wrong internally inside of us, instead of, like universal design is pointing out, Corbin, we create an accessible world. Because where disability exists is the interaction between us and the environment. That's where disability happens. And so, is autism a disability? No, I don't think it is. Am I disabled because of the interaction between my neurology and the environment and culture around me? Sometimes. And sometimes it's a blessing, and sometimes it's a neutral. But the reality is that when we change the way we look at it and we stop looking at it as a series of benefits and deficits, and we start looking at what does this person need to belong? Because as Brené Brown so beautifully put it, the opposite of belonging is fitting in. I don't want to fit in. I want to belong.
I think you, Brian, you just said it so beautifully. You just said it like, I don't want to fit in. I want to belong. Because when you're fitting in, it means like you have to be in such and such. You have to be this way. You have to think this way. You have to act this way. You have to this way and so on and so forth. But to belong means to be accepted. Not to be tolerated, but accepted for who you are. And I think that makes perfect. Included, exactly, exactly. To be included, to be part of this thing we call life.
I don't know if you realize this, Robert, but you almost perfectly quoted Brené Brown when you were talking about what it feels like to be included, like to belong. It was beautiful. I don't know if you ever read that quote, but it was so beautiful. Good job. That was amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, just to be part of life, this world we call life, this craziness called life, and just to be a part of it, to be here, be us.
I do presentations for the Los Angeles Police Department Mental Evaluation Unit every so often. I have a long-standing partnership with them, and as I explain how autism might appear during contact out in the field, and also that from a legal perspective, or once people on the autism spectrum are put into the legal system, that might as well be, pardon the expression, a death sentence. Because just for being who they are, not knowing their rights, saying something or doing something that warrants other actions, puts them on the path of basically self-incrimination. So I have to explain to officers that society seems to criminalize autism. We get the police called on us when we're having a meltdown. We get the authorities involved because we don't know the social cues of a given situation. And society, as much as it would be great to teach them, as much as it would be great to teach the police officers, as much as it would be great to teach the people in the autism community, I think everybody needs education about what to expect in legal situations. So that way, some forgiveness, some tolerance, some understanding can be given instead of being lock them up and throw away the key.
Well, and that brings in the point that I made earlier about intersectionality, because when we're dealing with intersectional pieces, and I know I'm a white guy, or at least present as white guy anyways, I'm anti-gender, but I'm a white guy talking about this. But the reason why we need to talk about this and bring this up every single time is because this, how exhausting is it for us to have to advocate for ourselves all the time in the environments we're in? Every single time that I've had a peer speak up for me, it's helped me out. It's given me energy. It's given me the ability to move forward. And so I bring up the intersectional piece as often as I can, because I want to be an accomplice to my peers who have intersectional identities. I want them to know that I'm here advocating and fighting and being and making sure that their rights matter as well. And so we need to bring up the intersectional piece, because if we don't, then really what we're doing is we're only advocating for a very small subsection of the whole human experience.
Yeah. And what about like in other settings too, like hospitals, the healthcare, you know, what does anyone want to share any experience or even the assumptions that are made by some medical professionals? Maybe if someone's with a caretaker, instead of speaking to the person, the patient, they're speaking to the caretaker just from an assumption, or going out to eat, paying for something, things like that.
I would like to say something to that. As you know, Tom is my fiance, for those you don't know that. Hello, Thomas Allen. Yes. And with him having his own clients, I have my clients as well. Something I have noticed, and I've seen it, a reoccurring situation, is some people on the spectrum where their caregiver or their parents don't allow them to even start having a credit line. And I say that because it's expected. You won't be able to do this. You won't be able to do that. So then there's a line of going on and on. So now we have a person that's a young adult. They may be in their 30s and they still haven't established a credit line. I think things like that, you're stopping a person. That's that stigma. That's that separation. You can't have these things. And I don't think that that's fair. While we were in Tanzania, Danielle was there and TJ was there, Tom and I. It was a couple that came up to Tom after his keynote and said that they have a son that was diagnosed with autism on the spectrum. And they were told their son would never have a family, would never get married. And I'm standing there thinking to myself, well, Tom is standing beside me right here. He has a Guinness World Record he has set. And he and I are set to get married. I'm not on the spectrum. And I think Sarah has her own story that she can tell. So for a medical profession to tell them their child can't do certain things, and this is a child, that's what we need to break, that stigma right there that we need to see a difference in. Thank you, and I yield my time.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing that you said that, Rosetta, because I remember when I was like in high school, I had an IEP, I had to be evaluated, and one of the psychologists who, like, one of my goals was to go to college, to avoid a college, because I knew that's something that would help me. But what the psychologist said in his report was like, you know, he has this goal of going to school. However, due to his autism diagnosis, it's very unrealistic. But here's the thing, like, I went anyway, and wasn't easy, but I stayed, graduated in 4 years, and I proved it wrong. And that's what I think we have to do as a community. We got, if we know that there's something we can do, and outside society tells us we can't, despite not knowing what our capabilities are, we have to prove them wrong.
I hate when I hear things like that, because who can tell the future? There are no future tellers out there. And that is just the most untrue thing ever. You can't base a child's future on where you're seeing them. Just like you can't stand in water that flows by you the same time twice, right? It only is going to happen once, and that's the opportunity. So I think that it's really up to the opportunities that are given to these children and to individuals, and these opportunities that we are needing to create with employment and with transitions and so much support. And it just really starts with each of us, so simply in our own communities, if we can, and gathering like this to make these wonderful podcasts to help educate everyone. So yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you. So I was misidentified as a child as having nonverbal learning disorder, which turns out that's one of the most common misdiagnoses underneath the DSM-3, I think it was. It had the person in that at the time been specializing in Asperger's syndrome. I would have been in Asperger's syndrome, but I got that diagnosis and identification as a child. And the teacher who delivered the IEP, because I got the identification around 14, she said to my mom, if Brian flips burgers or changes oil for a living, he'll be lucky. And I am so grateful that my mom did what she did and said what she said. I wasn't until years later that I found out about this, but she basically told that lady to take a long walk off a short pier. And me and my siblings were homeschooled. And it was hard. And my parents made plenty of mistakes. Who doesn't? But one of the most important things that I appreciate is that even with my mom not being fully understanding of what was going on, she advocated for me. And here I am now with multiple degrees, an owner or partner in at least two different businesses, a parent, a soon to be clinical, well, I am now a clinical director, and all of these different things. And I kind of wish I could find that lady and rub her nose in it, because she was betting against me and she lost hard. And that's the thing, is that when we bet against people, when we create these arbitrary rules for what determines success, we're missing the critical piece. Because one, apparently flipping burgers or changing oil was bad, according to this person. One of my favorite people in the whole wide world. He loves working on cars. He changes oil for a living. And he's probably one of the most amazing humans ever. And he's very happy. So what's wrong with that? He actually, for the longest time, was making much more money than me too doing the job. But like, what is success? And same thing is the same question is like, who are you? What is success? What makes somebody successful? I think right now we're so used to framing things inside the dynamic of, are you being productive, that we forgot to ask that, what's the purpose of being productive? If we can't live life, if people aren't allowed to be themselves, then what's wrong with the environment? Maybe it's time we shift the culture towards one where people can live and like truly live, like be alive instead of being a machine, a cog in the machine.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and of course, the environment, I just need to, you know, sort of come up on that. I mean, you know, I'm educated pre-K to 12 in public school, and public school is definitely a passion of mine. And the reason that it is a passion of mine is, you know, like some people can have, you know, that option to homeschool or such. But the thing is, financially, it's not viable for most people. And public school remains what is accessible. So it really comes down to those of us who are adults, you know, those of us who are working in special education, or those of us who collaborate well with our special educators, how can we make this better? In a lot of ways, I think public school has gotten better since I graduated in high school in 2014. Schools have really made a lot more sensory considerations, and I certainly like the impact that I am able to make as well. You know, people, and there's still a lot of like misunderstanding about things. You know, I've had conversations with some students that have used like the term autistic in sort of a derogatory way, and I got a good backup from the teacher in there that I was doing that. So there are some different generations and everything. I think you're a little older than me too, but there's obviously a lot of options on there. But no matter where you are, public education is something worth fighting for, simply because it is the most accessible option in everybody's neighborhood, and everybody deserves for it to be the best that it can be.
Thank you. Yes, worth fighting for, worth elevating voices and being the best advocates that we can be. We're almost at the hour already. This is such an amazing conversation, as always. So if everyone kind of, if you want to go around and add kind of one takeaway or call for unity, piece of advice, whether it's a lived experience, something you'd like to pass on to a specific professional or any community members, for anyone that may be listening, or even advice for teaching self-advocacy skills.
Yeah, I can just provide a brief one. This is all that I've kind of taken from our conversation here today. So thanks again for all the contributions. I get a lot out of this, to sound like a broken record for any purpose. If anything, I think what stuck with me the most is the comment regarding medical professionals and essentially, let's just say, pessimism or a prediction that's meant to garner fear, really an impetus, if anything, for gaslighting or any of these negative ways to curb any concerns that may arise, whether or not they are actually concerns or we're made to believe them to, again, get under the dome. Everyone blend in. So if anything, a call for any sort of semblance of service providers to understand that optimism and modeling that is so important for everyone that accesses any sort of healthcare services or any of the helping professions. I mean, it is important that we have faith that the future can be exceptionally bright for all persons, no matter what.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think that the medical profession definitely has not always done right by autistic people in the scientific community in general, with type of research that's been done, and just kind of the narrative surrounding autism that's put out to the public. Healthcare professionals are a lot of times the first point of contact for these families when they're getting their diagnosis. And I think that physicians especially have a duty to explain and give the facts about what a diagnosis means. And if they're going to give the worst case scenario, they also should be prepared to give the best case scenario along with that. And unfortunately, I think a lot of medical professionals in general just aren't as aware of the best case scenario that is actually the more likely scenario, right? So yeah, I'm hoping to maybe work on changing that. So thank y'all for putting this on. It's been great.
Yeah. And of course, everybody's talking, the question is, are we going to listen? And, you know, some people are easier to listen than others because it doesn't take as much effort. Maybe because, you know, it takes more effort to translate a different language or model an AAC or follow lip reading or any other like body language things. But if we're not willing to take that listening effort, there's so much that's being missed out on.
We have a quote at the SJ Child Show that I think is perfect and rounds so much up. And that is, a little bit of knowledge turns fear into understanding. And that can help so many families, service providers, teachers. So I think that that's so important to keep always educating, no matter what.
Absolutely.
I want to remind everyone that nobody can take your experience, good or bad, away from you. And each and every one of us has a story to tell, and no one can tell your story better than you can. And I know there might be some fear or stigma in letting it out or saying, enough, stop. And that's what I'm really conveying in my speech for the World Championship of Public Speaking. The glass is full, because our glass can only hold so much. It fills up quickly, and you may have it overflow, but it's up to you to say, the glass is full, and stop mm-hmm. that flow if or when you can. So with that being said, may you have your glass fill. And if it does overflow, may it be with prosperity, happiness, and love. Thank you.
And also, let's be part of this life. Let's find a way to belong. Let's belong.
I would like to say to all the caregivers, the parents, professionals that are giving you all, continue to love, keep loving. And remember, do not put your loved one, do not put your client, your child, or your spouse inside of a box. Humans are unpredictable. Don't stop them from blooming. Let them grow, because they may do something unexpected. Give them that space to do it.
The advice I would give to the professionals is, if you're working with people who experience disability, you need to understand disability. You need to understand the experience that we have. And I even have a resource that you can start with. It's a book titled Neuroqueer Heresies by Dr. Nick Walker. She wrote this book. It's a series of essays. It's available on audio. So if you're busy, you can listen, right? You don't have to listen to the book all at once. It can be a little heavy. There's some essays that are a little heavier than others, but I highly recommend it. I've been learning and loving the learning I've been doing, because it's been rounding out my understanding. For parents, for caregivers, for community members, understand that the person is the person in front of you, and that the way that we change things for the better is to create community. And we don't need compassion. We need community. I feel gross every time I hear somebody say compassion, referencing autistics, because I'm just like, I don't want you to feel bad for me. I want to be a part of the community. I want to be included. I'm a person. I make mistakes. You make mistakes. We're here. Let's make each other, let's let ourselves be human. And to that effect, like, okay, so you make mistakes as well. It's okay. This is a process. We're learning and growing together. So we need community. And yes, there are going to be people who are going to get upset. Guess what? We all get upset. We all feel dysregulated. It's not an autistic thing. It's a human thing. And so, like, if we're in this together, then that means that we can accept and own that we make mistakes. You make mistakes. It's all a part of the back and forth. That conflict is inevitable. But if we have conflict that allows for us to move up and improve things for everyone, that's where the real growth happens. We don't need the peace that is no conflict. We need the peace that is justice, to paraphrase Dr. King.
Yes. And my piece that I would say is reiterating the community. The community is so important. And stay curious, ask questions, don't just assume or dismiss people. Actually listen and investigate. And if you're looking for an answer, you may have to explore different things. whether it's a medical concern or, you know, behavior. Just continue to explore and ask questions. Don't shut people out. Learn from the past, the present, look towards the future, towards that community and creating space for everyone in the world. And if it's happening here, it's happening everywhere. So look far and beyond too.
Are you a self-advocate willing to share your story and educate others? Or a professional seeking to hear directly from autistic voices and improve your practice? Or are you a family member hoping to support and empower your loved one? Whatever your connection to autism is, we'd love to hear your takeaways from this episode in our online Global Autism community, where hundreds of people from all over the world come together to support each other and know that they're not alone. Join us today at community.globalautismproject.org. Let's work together to transform how the world relates to autism. Thanks for tuning in to Autism Knows No Borders. Take care.